Chapter 1. Such Dangerous Toys. He had been planning the assassination even before he bought the rifle. He had chosen his victim, scouted the location, written detailed notes in his journal, drawn maps and diagrams, even photographed the building. By the time he was ready to do it, his notebook bulged with all the information needed to carry out a successful political murder. Black and white surveillance photos, ideas on where to hide the rifle before the attack, the best spot for his sniper's nest, estimates of the range to the target, the distance between the building and some railroad tracks nearby. He had also planned his escape. After the shooting, he would conceal his rifle in a hiding place near the tracks and then flee on foot. He had little choice about the method of escape. He did not own a car. He did not even know how to drive. But the notebook contained all the vital information necessary to make a clean getaway on public transportation. The location of bus stops in the vicinity, and most important, the exact times that the buses would make those stops. Yes, he planned to coordinate an assassination with a bus schedule. He would have to kill his victim, run away, hide the rifle, and arrive at the stop just before the bus approached. Timing was everything. It would be too risky to stand at a corner for several minutes waiting for the next bus. He would be the first assassin in American history to try to escape the scene of the crime on a city bus. It was crazy, but it was crazy enough and so unexpected that it might work. He figured the police would never suspect or even look for an unarmed passenger riding a bus. His target was famous, but vulnerable. Aides or bodyguards could not protect the man from a clean shot with a rifle. The murder was sure to cause a national sensation and create headline news not only in Dallas, Texas, but throughout the country. The shooter had always wanted to make big news. If he could just get the target in his telescopic sight, it should work. At first, he had thought he might use a pistol, the assassin's traditional weapon of choice for slaying an American politician. He had already bought one by mail order more than 2 months ago. Back on January 28, 1963, he sent an order form and a $10 down payment to Seaport Traders in Los Angeles for a $39.95 Smith & Wesson 38 Special, a double-action, six-shot revolver with a 5-inch barrel cut down to a stubby 2.25 inches. The shortened barrel made the weapon easier to conceal in a pocket or a shoulder holster. He had signed the form with the false name A.J. Heidel, and he would owe the balance of the purchase price upon delivery. But a handgun was a dangerous and even suicidal choice. You had to get close to the victim to use it, and his target was a combat veteran who had served in the military. He might fight back. He thought better of it. No, using a handgun was out of the question. 6 weeks later, on March 12, 1963, he mailed a postal money order to Klein's Sporting Goods in Chicago and, under a false name, ordered an Italian World War II military surplus 6.5mm Mannlicher Carcano bolt-action rifle mounted with a 4-power telescopic sight. By coincidence, the revolver and the rifle both arrived in Dallas on March 25, 1963. He picked up the rifle at his post office box, which he had also obtained under a false name. When his wife saw the weapon, she was afraid. "What do you need a rifle for?" she asked. "What do we need that for?" Her husband told her a woman like her was incapable of understanding why a man like him needed to own a rifle. A few days later, on the last weekend in March, he had her take photographs of him in their backyard, brandishing his new rifle and wearing the pistol on his belt. "I was hanging up the diapers, and he came up to me with the rifle, and I was even a little scared, and he gave me the camera and asked me to press a certain button." She had never taken a photograph, and he had to show her how to operate his cheap Imperial Reflex camera. "I asked him then," she said, "why he dressed himself up like that with the rifle and the pistol. He was wearing all black, black shirt, pants, and boots. He had never dressed like that before. He assumed a few different jaunty poses. I thought he had gone crazy, she recalled. He told her he wanted to send the photographs to a newspaper. He held two newspapers in his hand while she took the photographs, copies of the left-wing journals The Worker and The Militant. She could not understand why he would call attention to himself that way. He said that he wanted to show that he was ready for anything. Then he told her it was not her concern, that it was man's business. After he had developed photographic prints, for privacy he did the work himself at the printing company where he worked. He gave one to his wife and said that she should keep it for their infant daughter, June. Of course, she thought, June does not need photographs like that. She hoped that he was just playing around, and that this was just another example of her husband's immaturity. If I had known these were such dangerous toys, she mused after it was too late.